back.
Recording in progress.
Hello, everybody. We resume with our cross-examination. I hand over to Advocate Mpofu.
Thank you, Chair. Right. So on a separate topic. Two issues around the topic of beneficiaries. One of them we have covered, that that's regarding the outstanding information from Mr. Maimane, correct? Correct. Then the other issue is that this is one issue where everyone seems to agree. Mr. Samuel, and even Mr. Kakana, and anyone else who was involved in this, was that it was the view, the collective view of the team, that there was no need to get into details on the issues of beneficiaries. I mean, that was not the focus of the investigation, correct?
Correct, based on the issues that were identified for investigation, yes.
Yes, and this view, as I say, everyone ranging from Mr. Samuel seems to share this view. You share that view as well?
I did, yes.
Thanks. Okay. And again, if you do the, what you call it, forward gazing, we know that subsequently, the portfolio committee felt that the second issue, apart from the issue of the politicians' direct involvement, that the issue of beneficiaries also needed to be probed, and it was probed in the, let's call it, the second round report. You may or may not know. Are you aware of that?
I'm aware of it.
Okay, thank you. And that report was released in 2020, I think. You are aware of that? Well, you know that you might not know the date, but you know that.
The report was released.
It was completed. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Right. Just checking something. If you go to page 3742, which is LRN 15, to you and others on the 7th of February 2018. Can you see that?
Yes.
That would be the day before the release of the report.
Yes.
Of the report, yes.
Yes.
And these were some of the issues that she was still raising, even at that stage. Issue one is confusing. A response to Section 7.9 not included in all issues in dispute. Mr. Ndo and team, let's meet at 10 in the morning, not happy with some of the information. The Masisi, bring along your comments. So this was a wide-ranging commentary and instructions to various people at the last minute, correct?
Correct.
And the purpose of me putting this up is just to demonstrate that the public protector, even on the 7th, was not aware that you were on leave. I think you covered that last week.
Yes.
Yes. And so that's why she was still dishing out instructions with your name, correct?
Correct.
And we now know that you were not available for that meeting at 10 o'clock in the morning because you were at your interview, correct?
Correct.
All right. And another, more importantly, the public protector was still putting emphasis here to the response to the Section 7.9 notices, one of which is the one we just read from the Premier, correct?
Correct.
And that would have by now included the response to your follow-up letter, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Again, you may not remember it blow by blow, but the response to your follow-up letter, did it cover some of the issues that you raised?
Chair, you mean the response from the Premier?
Yes.
Yes, I think it did cover some and
thank you.
Yes.
Okay. So you were not happy. I mean, you were happy. You may not have been 100% happy, but you didn't have to do another follow-up.
There was no follow-up, no.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Then, okay. Again, just to emphasize a point around the Gupta leaks. Okay, I think we've covered this, but just for the sake of emphasis, if you go to page 3811. This is now, you remember this was the version that had many comments from Mr. Namasisi. You remember that person?
Yes.
Yes. And he says at paragraph D, which used to be C, oh sorry, we're not there yet. It is 8.11. Yes. Is at paragraph D, which used to be paragraph C, he makes the emphasis, and again, this is the point I was saying about thinking about something in hindsight. At that time, it was recent because the Gupta list had just been discovered. So the recent newspaper articles on the emails reported on, that surfaced around June 2017, referring to the project, were noted but do not form part of the scope of this investigation. Remember that?
Yes.
Yes. And then in his comment, he says, this needs to be clarified. We may also indicate, I suppose, consultant wanted to say, that we did not investigate how the money transferred to Estina were spent, as the Hawks investigation is at an advanced stage. So that was, again, part of the culture that you and I spoke about, that sometimes if there was another parallel investigation by another arm of state, then you would leave the matter at that level, correct? So that they are not parallel investigations.
As a matter of principle, yes.
Yes. And a matter of practice and policy as well. Thank you. Right. Then if you go to 38, okay, now we covered this last week, the remedial action. At 8:05, please can you just go back to 8:05? You were asked about this letter. Again, this was 7th February 2020. This is now 8:30 in the evening, on the day before the release of the report. And I'm not going to go through that, but that email, you'll remember, covered some of the concerns from Mr. Namasisi, who was one of the last lines of defense at Legal Services, correct?
Correct.
And the point I simply want to make here is that whether his concerns were addressed or not addressed is an issue for another day. But none of the issues that he raised here had anything to do with the so-called direct involvement of politicians, correct? Excuse me. Okay, you might want to go through that.
I'm just going to read quickly,
Chair,
so that I confirm something
that I've
gone through here.
Fair enough. Yeah. We'll take it to the second paragraph. You see that he still confirms that there's this what I call the shortage of the bank statements from Estina, which would be used to verify the expenditure on the projects. That issue we discussed about the PEN, the fact that you would have the two-way verification. And then, this says, if Estina refused, we could subpoena their bank to provide those bank statements. So this was an area of concern for him.
Yes.
And then the next one, going to be looked at the issues identified for investigation. And he has, in other words, issues that may still be investigated in another round or by other people, correct? Which may be relevant to the complaint. That's just the paragraph after the bank statement.
Yes, I see that, Chairperson. I think my reading of this one is he wanted this to be part of the same investigation.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough, yeah. So it's identified for investigation. So it's not clear whether it's external or the same. You're saying you get the impression
that's my sense.
It might be so, yeah. Okay. And then the last issue that he raised is just to double check if the 7-9 was sent to the HOD. And he says, as they are the key people on the process and they are implicated one way or another. But all issues that are raised above can be obtained and incorporated into a final report before the 22nd, February 2018. Okay, so you're right. So you are saying that there would have been a week or two delay. Then it says there's a lot of public interest in this report and we need to ensure that we cover all the angles. So he raised those issues and he would have raised them with everyone, including yourself and Ms. Mkwebane.
Correct.
and you were not, by that time you were gone. So the public prosecutor's evidence will be that these issues were then negotiated between her and Mr. Nemasisi and everyone else. The decision to go ahead with the release was reached, but you were not there.
I was not party to that, yes.
Okay.
Well, that's fine. Right.
If you can then now go to so that would be the memorandum, Ms. Ndo, which came from you to the PP. This is now spanning the period of your involvement since the previous year, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. And if you can then, okay, just a blow-by-blow account of what has happened, which issues were investigated, which issues were not investigated, in quite significant detail. If you can just fast forward to 2739, please. Down to 7.
Yes.
Just interested in 7.3. So these were the issues that even at that stage you had identified as some of the issues to be incorporated. The one was the recent submission, 7.2.1, recent submission from the Premier's office that would have been the response from your follow-up letter, correct?
That's my understanding.
Yes. The next one was the internal legal opinion in regard to the CPP, that would be the report from Mr. Nemasisi and his team, which concluded that this was not a CPP, correct?
Yes.
And which Mr. Dembele testified here that he prepared it for Mr. Nemasisi, or they worked on it together. Did you know that?
I heard his testimony, Chairperson, but then I didn't know.
At that stage, you didn't know. Okay,
yes.
Fair enough. Okay. And then there's this issue of the beneficiaries, which we have covered. And then you are awaiting further evidence as undertaken by the leader of the DA, correct?
Correct.
And then your conclusion was that the task team is of the mind that the draft report did focus on the issues raised in the complaint. In other words, the complaint had been covered, broadly speaking, correct?
Correct.
It was not unnecessarily expanded or narrowed, correct?
Correct.
Right. And then And then the TASTIM is also aware that there are criminal processes which are being undertaken in respect of the matter. And the grand conclusion was that after the completion of the tasks mentioned in 7.3 above, the team should be able to submit a report. That would be the precursor to the signed report, correct?
Correct.
Right. And we've already covered what matters were indeed resolved and which ones were not resolved. Okay, but there were no other outstanding issues that we had identified as a team, correct?
Not outside of these ones that we have
mentioned.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
But,
okay, now let's go to the matter of HR related issues. And we'll start before we come to your specific issues. We've covered the issue of the Audi letters, we've covered the issue of your response to thereto and the resultant disappearance of the matter. Now, last week, you made it very clear, questioned by both Advocate Bauer and myself, that you yourself are not here to make any allegations about the PP, which would suggest that you were victimized, harassed, or intimidated at any stage, correct?
Not as it relates to me, no.
Yes. And you specifically denied that you ever told anyone that you were unfairly targeted by the PP, correct?
I have never told anyone that, correct?
Yes. And, well, you can blame yourself for choosing the wrong legal representative. When you did have an HR issue, you were represented by Mr. Samuel, correct?
Correct.
Yes. And he's the one that said you were unfairly targeted by the PP. He certainly didn't get that from you, correct?
I don't recall any such discussion with him.
Yes. All right. And you, to the extent that you were charged, it was not, as Mr. Samuel put it, you were not inexplicably charged. You knew about the matter. I mean, obviously, I'm not saying you agreed to it or admitted to it, but you knew about the HR issue relating to yourself, correct?
Yes, because I've been placed on suspension, yes.
Yes, you had to be in respect of that same matter.
Yes.
Yes, thank you. And the long and short of it is that you resigned before that disciplinary hearing could take place, correct? Let me put it this way. By the time set for the disciplinary hearing to take place, you had already submitted your resignation.
Yes, correct. Can I lay something on the record as
yes,
well?
Yes, please do so.
My indication from the employer was that the matter was concluded. So when I resigned, I was not aware that the matter would still proceed.
Thank you. Okay, that's important information. So it's not as if you resigned to run away from the matter. Is that what you're trying to explain?
Yes, Chairperson. And Chairperson, can I also raise another issue?
Yes.
I thought this is the part if Advocate Mpofu would like to raise, that would be raised in camera.
I'll watch that space, but yeah. Continue answering the question.
Okay.
Thanks, Ms. Endo. I'm quite aware of it. That's why I'm kind of sketching around it. If you feel uncomfortable, please do indicate. I'm not even describing. I'm simply saying, I think as you and I have been doing now, you are aware of the issue, of the HR issue.
I was, yes.
And you have indicated that you did not, your resignation was not done with the awareness that the matter had at that stage been revived, correct?
Correct.
Yes. And you've never said that the, you've never, similarly, you've never said that the PPE was responsible for reviving the matter in order to cast aspersions or cast shadows on your future prospects. Correct?
Correct, Chairperson. My sense was it's the complainant was pushing the matter.
Yes.
Yes.
No, not the public protector. Okay. Now, I could... All right. In fairness, Mr. Samuel did not attribute this to you, but for the record, I want to make it clear that he did not get this from you. He says in his statement, I could only conclude that the PP wanted to have these unresolved allegations of misconduct on his record, meaning you, casting a shadow over his future prospects. You never told anybody this. That might have been his view, but it was not from you, correct?
It wasn't from me, Chairperson.
Okay. Chair, you'll find that at page 2112 of Mr. Samuel's statement, paragraph 112. We don't have to go there, just for the record. Yeah. Thank you. All right. Thank you. There was also just to, you said you had been there for about 20 years, correct?
Plus minus 19 plus years.
Yes. There've been, you might want to assist the committee as someone who had been there over some time, particularly around this issue, because there seems to be two schools of thought. You've already assisted us in respect of the Audi letters. And there's a view advanced by people like Mr. Tebele that this was a good thing in the sense that, as it happened in your case, if someone gave a reasonable explanation that would be the end of the matter without it getting into your record or anything like that. Would you agree with that?
In my case, yes.
Yes. There's another view expressed by other people, as witnesses, they're wondering highly, but it is that the granting of somebody of an opportunity to somebody to exercise their right of natural justice to make representations was a form of harassment. You don't share that view.
Through you, Chairperson. For me, it depends on how the Audi letter comes.
Yes.
If, for example, people have the perception that the smallest mistake that they make, there will be an Audi letter, then perhaps there might be that perception that there is harassment.
Okay.
But on principle, to say if something has gone wrong and you are given an opportunity to respond, I mean, that's in terms of the law.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. And in any event, I accept that. But and that situation would obviously be better than what happens in other employment places where if you are perceived to have done something wrong, you are simply given a warning letter as a first step. It's better to proceed that with something that's not going to be in your record, correct?
Comparing the 2 years.
Yes. Right. Now, anyway, you yourself have not experienced any victimization or harassment or intimidation, correct?
Not from where I'm sitting, no.
Yes. And there have been also some bizarre statements which were made here that the public protector asked people to call her madam. I mean, have you ever heard of anything like that?
That's a new one to me. Perhaps it happened after I left. I'm hearing it for the first time.
Yes. I know. Well, you're hearing it for the first time because it was an imaginary thing. Yeah. But in your experience in all the years that you were there, you whether it was this public protector or any previous one that you served under, people called the person public protector or PP, isn't it?
It's usually PP.
Yes.
That has always been the case.
Yes.
Advocate backwards time.
Yes. Okay. And that never changed with any of the PPs that you served under?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Yes. Thank you. And then there was another one about people had to bow down to the public protector in Buddha style. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
I haven't.
Oh. All right. And the last one was, and this one, I can imagine that when the, let's say there was a meeting, the public protector walked in, people would stand up. That was a practice that was there even before this public protector, correct?
With meetings?
Let's say there's a formal meeting in a boardroom. When the principal walks, I mean, it happens, I know, in government departments. When the executive authority enters, some people would stand up.
Stand up, yes.
Yeah. That happened for, as I say, with the other previous public protectors as well.
I recall during Professor Madonsela's time, it would happen.
Yes.
Especially with your top management.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Ndol. And just, you know, if the opportunity arises, would you serve again at the public protector?
I would.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson. There are no further questions.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. That's the end of our cross-examination. I will now proceed to members. Before that, just to say on a lighter note, after lunch, when we come back from lunch, I will come in with all of you seated. I'd like when I come in, starting from Advocate Mpofu, everybody else, when the chairperson comes in there, you will all rise.
Yeah. Can I be the first one?
No, thank you. That was another lighter note.
During the lunchtime, I'll also teach them how to bow down to you. Thank you, sir.
No,
thank you,
sir. No, thank you. Can I recognize the members? Honorable Lothric. My name is Andre. Heron. Sukers. Lionel. Kabude. Siwela. Skosana. Thank you, honorable members. Okay. 12:32. Honorable Lothric, you are recognized.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And yes, it's already good afternoon, Mr. Ndo. Just in terms of your affidavit, I would just like to have clarity on the following. In paragraph 9, you refer to under the approach to the investigation that you sat in the CEO's boardroom to look specifically at the receipts of what was purchased at the Freda Dairy. You then state who was all involved and then basically who then left at what particular point. What was the outcome of that meeting in terms of the receipts, because later on it is said that you still don't have sufficient information about this.
Through you, Chair, thank you, honorable member. My recollection at that meeting was the only receipts we could come up with or identify were only 9 receipts that related to the purchase of cattle, and that was it, and which then prompted me when I wrote to the Premier in response to indicate that there is still some information that is outstanding, including invoices and receipts. So that was how we concluded the meeting. Yes, I don't know if I've answered the question to your satisfaction through you, Chair.
Thank you. So you said then you then went to the Premier to get the additional information. That was not part of the Section 9 letters.
Yes, that was the response to the Section 7-9 letters. Just perhaps through you, Chair, to indicate that one of the issues that the Free State Office had indicated was that they couldn't get all the information that they required from the Premier's office or from the Free State Department. So that's why
than when we're sitting on the day. One of the, well, the main task of the day was to look at what was submitted and then to identify what was missing and so on. That was the exercise of the day.
Thank you. And were any reasons provided by the Premier's office or the administration as to why they could not produce those receipts?
Through you, Chair, I can't really recall whether there were any reasons advanced. Yes.
Okay, and you didn't follow that up further at a later stage?
Not that I recall, no.
Thank you. Then I want to turn to paragraph 12, and this refers to the cell phone call that the public protector made to you after that meeting. How did you interpret what you state in 12.2, that the PP would personally be happy if there were no adverse findings in this report? How did you understand it?
My understanding of that, Honourable Member, was to say then whatever evidence is found in the investigation should not, we shouldn't have regard to it, because then the evidence would then lead to adverse findings. That was my interpretation of that statement.
Have you ever encountered this before?
It was my first time.
Okay, thank you. You also state further on that you actually gave or informed Advocate Celia of what the PP allegedly told you, that she was doing the bidding of the DA. How did Advocate Celia react to this when you told her this?
My recollection is she denied it, and if I'm not mistaken, she actually said she belonged to a completely different party. I can't remember which, but that was her reaction.
Thank you. And then my last question, regarding the report and the one that you said you were part of, the final one, the capacity and financial constraints. You also, in your oral evidence now, said or confirmed that in most instances you did suffer from financial constraints and capacity. Was it then in the ordinary course of things or normal course of things that would be included in a report to state that we had such problems? Or was this something that you were not used to?
I can't recall through you, Chair, any other report that might be there that specifically referred to the issue of financial constraints then affecting the report. But this is the only one that I can recall.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Wapret. Honourable Mananiso.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me greet members on the platform and as well members in-house, and greet the Advocate Pofu and as well Advocate Bauer.
Are you able to show your face? We've been seeing this picture.
You know, Chair, I thought you said that you are able to see when the network is not right. So with me as well, I'm not in a stable network.
Okay, continue. We'll check your network now.
Can I continue? Chairperson?
Continue for now, yes.
Yes, Chair, thank you. Chairperson, let me as well welcome Ntatendo. Greetings, Ntatendo.
Greetings, Honourable Member.
Sir, my first question to you is with regards to your affidavit, paragraph 42. You indicate that you received a text message from the PP instructing you to return to work, but you did not. Doesn't that not equate to insubordination, as you defied an instruction from the head of the institution?
through you, Chair, from where I'm sitting, Chairperson, I had to balance, you know, how I'm perceived, especially from an outside organization that had invited me for an interview at a very high level, and the fact that already when the public protector sent me the email, I'd already applied for leave. So those were the two contrasting interests that I had to balance, which is why when I went back to the office, I expected some recrimination. Yes.
Okay, thank you, sir. And then my second question to you is, when you received the SMS, did you feel intimidated or threatened? How did you feel?
Through you, Chair, if I had felt intimidated, I would have returned to the office. The reason that I didn't return to the office immediately, because the SMS was very clear. I would have returned to the office, but I didn't feel intimidated. That's why I did not return to the office. I thought I would explain it on my return to the office.
Okay. Then, Mr. Ndo, if you are given an opportunity to actually classify the leadership style of the PP, what would you say?
Unfortunately, I can't help you there. I'm trying to look for me, Chairperson. Truth be told, I don't think I can describe the leadership style of any of my previous principals. People have got different attributes and so on. So I'm not really sure I can come out with an answer that makes sense to anyone sitting here.
Okay. And then, Mr. Ndo, on paragraph 43, you indicated that you anticipated the possibility of there being adverse consequences for not going back to the office on your leave day. What did you say that there was a culture of fear within the OPP?
Chairperson, through you, for me, I mean, most of, the top management, especially at head office, are legal people. So for me, I'll deal with any intended action based on what the law says. So I wasn't intimidated. I would have dealt with it on the merits like any other matter that came towards me.
Okay. Mr. Ndo, the manner in which the investigations was handled, do you think the PP failed the poor and the vulnerable in this regard?
Sorry, through you, Chair. I didn't catch the last part.
Yes, please
I'm
repeat, Honourable Vanessa.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. My question is, in the manner in which the investigation was handled, do you think the PP failed the poor and vulnerable in this regard?
My response to that one, Chairperson, is not having looked at the beneficiaries, for example, and what they got from this project, at least at the stage that the investigation had been concluded, there is an argument to be made that perhaps we could have, when we identified the issues, looked at the beneficiaries, because ultimately the project, from my understanding, was supposed to be about them.
So from that perspective, yes, I think we could have done better.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. That's it from my side.
Thank you, Honorable Mananiso. We have checked your network, so we can confirm that it is very unstable. But the next discussion we'll have with you is an alternative picture next time that you can start looking at. Thank you. Honorable Gondo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Dumela, Mr. Ndolugai. Ndadendo, I know you have indicated that you can't describe with certainty the leadership or management style of the various incumbents you've had the privilege of serving under, I mean, for plus or minus 19 years whilst working in the Office of the Public Protector. But I have to ask you this. Then how would you contrast the management or leadership style of Advocate Mkhwebane vis-a-vis that of Advocate Madonsela?
I'm through you, Chairperson. I'm still... trying to come up with an answer that would place, on the one hand, Advocate Mkhwebane and the now Professor Madonsela. For me, the one thing I can say about Advocate Mkhwebane was during her term when I was there, there would be a lot of emphasis on deadlines, for example, whereas during Advocate Madonsela, that for me didn't come out as much. That's the best I can do in terms of comparing them. I'm not sure if I can be able to give you any response beyond that.
All right. Thank you very much. My next question then is, as someone who occupied a senior management position within the Office of the Public Protector, in your opinion, and I'm asking this, you know, on the basis of you having been in the office, did you ever get the distinct impression that the Office of the Public Protector under Advocate Mkhwebane maintained close relationships or links with the State Security Agency? I'm asking this because we heard evidence last week from Mr. Shelela that the Office of the Public Protector maintained close links or relationships with the SSA. He informed this committee that an official from the SSA, namely Mr. Prince Ntshavheni Makhutama, sat on the appointment panel that appointed Mr. Neshunji. We also heard from Mr. Jelela that the SSA even seconded someone to act as CFO at the Office of the Public Protector.
My sense, given three things, would be to say I sense that there was this open communication between the SSA and us. One, I have been involved in the project before Advocate Mkhwebane came to the office to put together a case management system, and it wasn't finalized, but I was aware that at some point the state security agency then wanted to put together a system for us. So that's the one incident. The second one
related to the appointment of Mr. Baldwin Neshunji. The fact that there was somebody from state security suggested to me that perhaps there is an open communication with state security. Those are the incidents that I can think of.
So were you there at the time that someone was seconded from the SSA to act as CFO?
Yes, I was there.
Do you recall the name of the gentleman?
No, I cannot. It's quite some time back.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right. Do you know Mr. Vusumusi Menzela? Muzelewa?
I can't recall the name off the top of my head.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much. We heard evidence from several witnesses suggesting that Advocate Mkhwebane made, you know, top secret security clearance a prerequisite for some of the employees at the Office of the Public Protector, especially senior officials. Do you know why this was the case? And to your knowledge, did officials of, you know, senior officials of the Office of the Public Protector work with documents that can be categorized as being classified or top secret in the course of their day-to-day duties?
Through you, Chair, the issue of top secret predated Advocate Mukwevane's time. I, for one, for example, by the time I left, I had a top secret clearance that had just expired. This dates back to, if I'm not mistaken, Professor Matonsela's time. On the issue of document classification, my sense is that we didn't then go to the next step of saying this document is classified as top secret, so it can only be seen by somebody who's got a top secret clearance. I don't think we went to that second step, but in terms of security clearances, there was top secret, there was secret, and so on. Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. I now want to ask you questions around the Friday investigation. In paragraph 14 of your affidavit, you say that you left the meeting that was held in the CEO's boardroom to go home. And on the way home, the PPP called you to tell you that Advocate Siliers was doing the bidding of the DA and that she'd be happy if there were no adverse findings made in the report. You stated in your evidence in chief that you understood this to be more of a desire than an instruction. If this was indeed a desire on the part of Advocate Mkhwebane and not an instruction, why do you think she felt the need to convey this desire specifically to you and not to, for example, Advocate Mshonyeni?
Through you, Chair, I wouldn't know. I was just reporting the contents of the conversation that we had. My sense off the top of my head would be, since I was the highest person in the branch that dealt with the matter, if she wanted to express a desire, then it would have been to me. That was my sense.
Thank you. You stated in your evidence in chief that you shared what the Public Protector told you over the phone with your team. Please confirm if you shared this with Mr. Kekana and Mr. Samuel. And if you did share it with them, please indicate what you said to them. Did you tell them that, you know, she said this, but I believe that it was more of a desire than an instruction? I'm asking this because Mr. Kekana informed the committee in his evidence that the instruction to not make any adverse findings against politicians from Advocate Mkhwebane was relayed to him by yourself, and this was corroborated by Mr. Samuel in his evidence.
Thank you. honorable member. What I shared is what I said in my affidavit, the way it was expressed to me. I don't recall a discussion going into specifics whether this would include not making findings against politicians. I wouldn't want to come here before the committee and say it was a specific instruction to say don't make findings against politicians. I reported it to them as I recalled the conversation, which is what I've included in my affidavit. And I did share it with Mr. Gegana, because he was part of the team that was assisting me. I did share it with Mr. Samuel as well, since the report emanated from his office.
In your opinion, why then was Advocate Cilius subsequently removed from the investigation and excluded from the task team that was established to finalize the report, if what Advocate Mkhwebane said to you over the phone was merely a desire or a wish and not an instruction?
The task team, through you, Chair, was my own initiative. It was a task team of people who were in the vicinity within Pretoria. All the task team members were stationed in Pretoria, and that's the reason we did not include Advocate Silie, because the file has been brought over to head office, and the task team would be sitting together and going through the file itself, which would have been a bit difficult to include Advocate Silie, who was still stationed at the Free State office.
So you did not...
That will be your last point. Check your time.
Okay, so you did not exclude Advocate Cilius from this task team because Advocate Mkhwebane had indicated that she was doing the bidding of the DA?
Not at all.
All right. My last question, Chair. So in paragraph 43 of your affidavit, you state that when you returned to the office from leave, you received a notice in the form of an Audi letter. Am I correct?
Correct.
Please confirm who issued you with the notice and whether you believe that this notice was issued under the instructions of Advocate Mkhwebane.
As far as I can recall, the notice was from Ms. Ntoriseng Mutsitsi, who was then acting as the CEO or COO, but I think it was CEO, and I reported to her directly then. I had no inkling, for example, that this would have been at the instruction of the public protector herself. But I'm sure the issue of my being on leave on the day and the fact that the public protector had sent me an SMS saying my leave was withdrawn would obviously have been an input from the public protector. As to whether it was an instruction from me, I can't really speak to that, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Gondwe. Can I recognize Honorable Aaron?
Good Chair. Ms. Sindor, I just want to go back to your first involvement with the Frieda report. Were you involved in the Frieda investigation prior to the task team being established in late 2017? Had you had any prior involvement with the Frieda matter?
No, I did not.
And did you have any awareness of the Frieda investigation at that prior to heading up the task team?
Yes, I would have, because it would have served before the task, the think tank, yes.
And does this go back to the period when Advocate Cilius was heading the investigation in the Free State under the previous public protector, Advocate Maronsela? Did you attend think tank meetings?
Yes, I did.
During that time?
Yes,
and the Freda reporters discussed at those think tank meetings?
I'm not sure at what point it was placed, but it would have been at some point.
Yes. So you were aware of the report before then?
Yes.
Before you took over as part of the task team?
I would have, yes.
And in that time, can you recall if Advocate Maronsela ever issued instructions that politicians should be investigated at any of the think tank meetings?
I really can't recall.
So, because Mr. Samuel gave evidence that Advocate Maronsela was never happy with the report that was being drafted in the Free State because it didn't implicate politicians. Did that ever come up at a think tank meeting?
Not that I recall.
And so at a think tank meeting that you can recall, was there ever an instruction from Advocate Maronsela to Mr. Samuel or to the Free State to include politicians in the investigation?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
When the matter was handed over to the head office and you were asked to form this task team, how did the task team work? There were four of you in the task team, is that correct? Mr. Kakana, Advocate Redani, Mr. Satole and yourself?
Chairperson, just to indicate that I was not instructed to form a task team. It was my own initiative. And the reasoning behind that was that at the time that the file was transferred to head office, I did not have investigators in my branch. They were still not yet transferred to my branch, which is why I had to then ask the public protector to form a task team of investigators who were not within my branch then to be part of this task team.
So when the file was handed over from the Free State to the head office, it was essentially handed to you and your branch, but it was your suggestion that a task team be established.
Yes, it was my own initiative, yes.
And did you identify who should be part of the task team?
Yes, I did.
And the public protector agreed to those members?
Yes, that's my recollection.
Thank you. And then how did you work with this investigation, the four of you? And I'm specifically referring back to your answer to Advocate Mpofu last week, where you said that you only looked at the latest report.
Yes.
We had Mr. Advocate Radani who gave evidence that he read all the reports. So I'm trying to understand how you worked as a task team. Was that a task that Mr. Radani had been given, and you only read the most recent report or version of the report, but he was asked to read all the reports?
I was not part of the task team, Honourable Member. They were the task team that I put together to go through the file and the evidence and the reports, and then they would report to me.
Thank you. And did you ever look at any of the evidence?
You mean as a task team?
No, you as Mr. Ndor, Advocate Ndor.
Yes, on the day that we, was it the 6th and the 7th, when we were finalizing the report, yes, we did look at the evidence to see if it supported the findings.
And was there any evidence that would implicate the politicians in wrongdoing?
Not beyond taking action against the HOD, as far as I can remember.
And finally, I mean, when Mr. Samuel gave evidence, his statement, if I look at his affidavit, paragraph one, I don't, you won't have it in front of you, but I'll just quickly refer to paragraph 177 of his affidavit to this committee, which is on page 2133. He says this in his affidavit, and he said this also in oral evidence. that he didn't feel that the report had gone far enough, and that in his view, the politician's wrongdoing had not been limited to failing to take disciplinary action, which I think contradicts what you've just said in terms of what you found in the evidence. But he gave evidence that he formed this view based on politicians taking ownership of the project in public, and he mentioned that the Premier had included the project in a State of the Province address. Would that ordinarily constitute evidence of wrongdoing?
Not from where I'm sitting, no.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Haran. Honourable Sukas? Honourable Mari Sukas from the virtual platform.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Ndo, thank you for coming out to this committee to present yourself. I just have a few questions that I would want to ask you. And the first is, you were acting CEO. Did you apply for the permanent position?
Chairperson, just to indicate, that was not my first acting CEO stint, just to put that on record. And I did apply for the permanent position, yes.
Were you told why you were not successful?
Yes. I recall myself and Ms. Mukhaladi, we had also applied for the position. We were individually called to the Public Protector's Office and informed that someone with more experience had been appointed, yes.
Just for the sake of time, I will leave that follow-up question out. I just want to go to the Frieder report. It has been stated that the Frieder report was long delayed, it was urgent, and it was very important for the Public Protector South Africa to release it. From your evidence, the Public Protector's approach to setting due dates for reports seems to have been rather ad hoc. And for example, you state the Frieder report could have waited a few days. How were due dates for reports determined?
If it's at the task team meeting, sometimes the Public Protector would ask us how long a report would take to be finalized and then sent through to her, and would give an indication. But sometimes, depending on the urgency of the matter, then she would indicate that she would want the report by a certain date.
Thank you. Was there any sort of corruption or tip-off hotline at Public Protector South Africa that was monitored by an independent body to which staff could report misconduct, or a whistleblower hotline?
If I recall correctly through you, Chair, at some point, I don't know whether during Advocate Mukhwebane's time there was a hotline, but at some point we did have it. I can't remember the time frames between which time and which time.
So are you saying, Mr. Ndo, that there was a place, and I'm talking about in your recent memory under the authority of the current PPSA, the Public Protector, I'm sorry, was there any place where senior staff members instructed or indicated that they wanted something improper done, where there was a safe place staff could, without fear of reprisal, report that?
Not that I'm aware of in my recollection.
You said you were looking for another position in February of 2018. Now, let me state that when an employee puts in annual leave and says personal reasons, that should be sufficient. Wouldn't you agree? and an employee doesn't need to justify their leave.
I would agree with that, Honourable Member.
So my question, what was the reason for you at that time to look for new opportunities and eventually for you leaving the Office of the Public Protector?
Through you, Chairperson, it was not the first time I applied for positions outside. I had been applying for quite some time, even before the allegations that were made against me. I had been applying for positions, including for a commissioner of the Public Service Commission, where I was interviewed in Cape Town. My sense was I had been in that office for quite some time, and I needed a new challenge. That was the reason.
I didn't hear your answer earlier. I think one of my colleagues or committee members asked, I'm not sure, I think it was under the cross-examination, perhaps, that you were asked whether you would return to the Public Protector's Office. Could you just repeat what your answer was?
I said yes. Given the nature of the work, yes, I would.
Mr. Ndo, what quality control measures were in place to ensure Rule 53 records were complete? And when it was found that they were not complete, what quality control steps were taken to ensure that these records were complete?
My recollection of Rule 53 records is that we would be asked to bring over the file to legal, and then legal would then look at the file in terms of what is there relating to reports and so on, and if there is a report that's missing, then they would ask us for if we've got copies of the report, but that's my sense. It would be done at legal services. Then they would indicate to us what is missing. It's not something that was done at branch level.
I think my question goes perhaps to the issue of when the organization or the public protector was found lacking in that regard. In your experience, was anything done, corrective measures taken, or quality control measures improved when there were gaps identified? Not so necessarily internally, I understand the internal process, but externally when there was adverse findings of any kind that pointed towards gaps such as incomplete records. Was there any corrective measures put in place?
Not that I know of, Chairperson.
You worked with many public protectors. Anyone other than Advocate Mkwebane ever expressed a wish like the wish that you that she expressed to you as per your affidavit?
No, Chairperson.
My apologies, sir. I couldn't hear you.
I said no.
Was there any other person, Mr. Ndo, other than yourself, and I heard your answer earlier, that you know of that felt targeted, bullied, or intimidated by the public protector?
Not anyone who expressed that to me, no.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Ndo, for your answers. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sukas. Thank you, Mr. Ndo. That takes us to lunch. We will pause and be back at 2. And we'll start with Honorable Milam. I will not say rise for lunch, but you can go for lunch.
Recording stopped.